Sometimes it seems like every kind of story on the screen has been told, and there's no new way to innovate in the medium of feature film. And then you realize that the world is constantly changing, and that if you tell stories in a way that reflects our endlessly shifting landscape, then maybe you can find ways to innovate. My guest today, Timur Bekmambetov, is a filmmaker who's been at it for a long time, started off in Russia. His story is amazing. It includes Roger Corman. It includes some of the biggest action features of the last couple decades. And it also includes a twist where he found himself searching for a new way to tell stories. And he happened upon one in a moment of discovery. And now he is deep into a new kind of feature filmmaking that I think is extremely unique and interesting, and definitely an opportunity for people to innovate and connect with younger audiences as our culture continues to shift in exactly this way, more and more all the time. So I'll leave the rest to Timur and our discussion. So exciting to have you here. I really want to talk about the new film, but to get started, you have had an amazing career. There's like too much to talk about in the time we have, but I am just to get our audience familiar with where you started. Done so much. What was sort of the first step for you into a career in producing, writing, directing films in Russia originally?
I was a production designer. I studied as a production designer many years ago, and then I had a problem to find the director to work with, and I decided to direct myself. Then I couldn't find the writer to write story for me as a director writing, and then I couldn't find the producer who will trust me, and I start producing myself. The only missing part is acting, and I never did it.
There's still time. So, well, I'm curious though, like, so, cause you started in Russia, in Russian film, you kind of changed a little bit of what was coming out around the time, you know, your kinds of movies, the stories you chose to tell. Did you know you wanted to be in feature filmmaking? Did you think maybe you wanted to be in documentary or TV at first? Like what was the motivation?
I made a first movie 1993. And it was war movie about Afghanistan, very edgy art house movie where everyone dead. And it was almost black and white, scary and angry. It's like a platoon on steroids. And I really like Platoon, by the way. Then in Russia, there is a moment when all the cinemas were closed for like almost like 10 years because of perestroika and the crisis, and there were furniture stores in the cinemas and it was for a long time, for like almost like 8-9 years, and I spent this 8 years to direct a lot of commercials, because it was the only form of cinema, of movie making was available at that time. And and I learned a lot, and I got addiction to make something for a wide audience, you know, because commercials, it's not for smart and art people, but it gives you kind of addiction, you know, you're waiting. You want people to talk about on the street, to talk about your stories. And then, suddenly 2000, whatever, I was by accident, I met Roger Corman,
Yes.
And it was a turning point because I got a script from him.
Tell me about how it was by accident. Roger Corman's the beginning of so many great careers, yours included. Tell me about the accident.
He's constantly looking for a filmmaker who can make movie for a few hundred thousand bucks. And right. And I was that one. And a friend of mine, he gave him the tape with my commercials, and he suddenly proposed me the script to direct in Russia about women gladiators in ancient Rome.
Nice. This was the arena?
Yes. And
yeah.
with only like a few hundred thousand dollars. And he sent me to Leeds. For months, I was trying to get their tapes. And he said, no, it's great. They're training. And then finally, he sent me the package. And it was a two Playboy. There was a Playboy magazine in it with a yellow with a yellow sticker on top. Page number 12 and page number 18. And it was two girls. They appeared a few weeks later in St. Petersburg where we shot the movie. Very scared, very unprotected. Oh, and
was it hard to direct them as a young director? Well, not. I mean, you know, like early in your feet, you directed the feature earlier. You've done a ton of commercials, but you know, it was like they were obviously not. This was not their first type of gig, you know.
I think the question should be different. It was difficult for them to be in the movie in the middle of forest woods in Russia in the fall, almost naked with the swords,
fighting. Yeah, fighting. For $100,000 or
and they were very very nice and really scared. And absolutely not trained to do the action scenes. And I
on that kind of budget, did you have anybody who could do the fight help with that sort of thing?
Yes, there was a few Russians stunt coordinators, and they gave them the swords, and the girl starts crying, and I said, "What's happened?" They gave us real swords. I said, "And?" And they said, "No, we use plastic ones." And I asked stunt guys, "Do you have plastic ones?" They said, "No, we don't. We have only real ones." And they gave them real swords, and they start training them. And I scheduled the production to push all the action scenes, fighting scenes, till the end, and gave them time to rehearse and to train. Right. And they spent time. And then at the end of their journey, they were very tough, edgy, mosquito-bitten girls in the middle of the woods and fighting.
Nice. So it worked out.
It's funny movie. It's a Roger Corman movie. It's exploitation.
Yeah.
And kind of it sets up the taste for me because before that I was very arty, you know?
Mm.
I grew up watching Fellini and Polanski, Visconti, whatever, like a French, Italian, American art movies. And then
Combination of commercial directing and then this the Corman experience sort of formed you in a new way.
I think so. With the background, with the basement from earlier. My early experiences like art movies, because I remember all these French, Italian, British filmmakers from 80s, 70s.
And that's why, so pretty quickly after that, really Night Watch, which was what launched you on an more international scale, like the success of Night Watch, right? And that, so did Night Watch really come from the stew, you would say, of having done the Corman movie, the commercials, but also having, like you said, the foundation?
I think it is. I think it's a exactly mix of Roger Corman and and Fellini, which is not crazy, which is not irrational, because Roger Corman was the distributor of Fellini movies in the United States, as you remember.
Right.
He brought all the art house movies in the United States in 70s and 80s. And for me, it was quite interesting mix between very arty ideas and very, very straightforward vampire genre rules.
And that sort of like kept, you know, then you did Daywatch, you did a number of different films after that, Irony of Fate. What sort of became your as a filmmaker, what we, once you kind of launch onto that stage, it changes things, right?
Yeah, I think Wanted was a kind of the end of the, like the peak, because Wanted is a Nightwatch and Daywatch with a great cast, with a big, mm-hmm. great American cast, and with a lot of money.
Yeah, it was an all-star cast, a massive budget, a, you know, big release. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's because it's kind of Nightwatch. I mean, the same tone, because it's a genre movie, it's a superhero movie with an R rated, with the edgy. It was one of the first edgy superhero movies in the United States, and before it was a kids movie. Yeah,
I feel like it was a little before its time almost, because a lot of things like that are more of that genre sort of happens now, sort of. Yes. But I think in like 2008, it was kind of a little bit ahead of it. It was like it didn't fit in the box yet.
Yeah, I think there was only a few, like a 300 was another one.
Right, yeah.
It's just only a few. And the Batman happened after that. The Dark Knight.
Yes. And
it was right. It was a moment when the audience got older. You know, and they need something edgy, something spicy. And then I was trying to use the same thing a few times and honestly looking for a new way. And yeah. Because I made a Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, then we had a very difficult journey with the Ben-Hur. And then during that period, I was all looking for something new, and this new became a Screen Life. It became Unfriended. Yeah. Unfriended,
yes.
The first movie we made in 2013, 14, right at that time.
Right. You were exploring a new format, is basically what you're saying. Because it seems like you'd worked in the traditional, like Ben-Hur. I mean, it's Ben-Hur. It's like one of the classic models of the big screen,
action, adventure,
everything. All of that.
Yeah, there was nothing to add. It was what I learned.
Yeah.
There is nothing to add. And it was big production and was a lot of people around. It was very stressful. And I, at the same time, I was looking for new language, for new form, new type of cinema, the cinema of the 21st century. Then I understood that I live in digital space. All my friends there, because they're all around the world, and I probably the last time I was in Los Angeles, maybe it's like almost 2 years ago, but I don't feel it. I don't feel it. I feel that I'm there. I feel I know what's happening on my street and with my friends,
right?
Because we live in the same space, in the same universe. It's a Screen Life, suddenly understood that the only way to tell story about my life and about our life is to tell the story about our screens, how we behave on screens, how we what kind of fears we have, what kind of dreams, what kind of characters around us.
Streamlining the post-production video editing process just got a whole lot easier with Spider Checker Video. It's a handy, portable tool designed to leverage how video is processed when working with vector scopes, waveform monitors, and editing software. Included is a patent-pending color pattern card that generates an easy-to-understand pattern of hues at 2 saturation levels, so you can see how all colors between primary and secondary colors are being captured. The result? You start off with more accurate color at the start of your video shoots, so you have less color editing to do later. Now you can save $20 off the purchase price of Datacolor Spider Checker Video. Just visit datacolor.com/NFS and enter code NFS at checkout. Offer is valid in US and Canada through 6/30/24.
It sounds like there was a moment, and I want to talk about more about Profile and screen life and the way it affects the viewer as well. But it sounds like there was a moment of discovery for you where you realized that the screen life format was where you were going to be telling stories. Was there a specific event, or was it just like you're saying, like, I spend so much time there that it occurred to me that that's how I want to tell my story?
No, the screen life legend exists. the urban legend of screen life.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Is there the legend? Yeah.
Yes, there is. I was my co-producer on Profile, Olga Harina, and co-writer. We were on Skype with her. It was like almost like 9 years ago. And at that time, Skype just released the function share screen. And she did share screen with me to show me some pictures.
Like, was it for a film you were pre-production on something?
Yeah. Marketing. Then when we finished, she forgot to unshare. When we changed the subject, she forgot to unshare.
Yeah, which happens all the time nowadays. Yeah.
Yes. And I was just shocked watching what she's doing during the business conversation. Like she's like sending messages to her friends.
Oh wow!
And buying some intimate stuff. And I said to her, Olga, sorry, I see your screen. You forgot to unshare. And he said, oh, well, sorry. And at that moment, I understood that I was inside her. I was so deep into the into her mind.
Yeah.
Because I saw how she's what she's Googling. I saw what she sees.
It's her POV. It's her, yes. And it also tells you everything about the person. Watching Profile is like, or any of these movies, it's unnerving because afterwards you get into your screens and you're like, oh wow, am I being watched? Like I don't know how to explain it, but it takes voyeurism, the voyeuristic aspect of cinema. I kept thinking about Hitchcock and Rear Window.
Yes.
Like it's the modern version. It's amazing.
Yes. Yes. And we just, the beginning is just beginning of this process, exploring this world. And we don't have rules yet. We don't have ethical rules. We don't have we all really need to understand who we are in this world because it's very different universe. And I think screen life movies is the only way today to understand where we go, what's ahead of us.
I tend to agree. I mean, in watching it, I was kind of thinking too, like, I think you made a thriller and it has political aspects. It has like, you know, there's a terrorist cell involved like that. And that is really a good use of the format because of the voyeurism, the creepiness, you know, but there's so much you could do, right? Like, I mean, tell me, what are the other, like, how many genres fit into screen life? Do they all fit in? Can you do like
yes, yes,
what's your, every, what's your plan for the format?
every genre we're trying. We have a Romeo and Juliet. We shot Romeo and Juliet and premiered at Sundance. It's Romeo and Juliet where the story takes place on the screens of teenagers today. We're producing sci-fi movie with
Ice Cube. Is this our hashtag J? Yeah, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, with Ice Cube and Eva Longoria. We shot a comedy called Liked. It's a Cyrano de Bergerac story.
Yeah.
In screen life.
Perfect for that, right?
Yeah
because because you can see the advice coming in and then the behavior. Like, I mean, you just, it unfolds in your mind.
Yes, exactly. And I planning to make movie like kind of like Memento in screen life.
Interesting.
Like Beautiful Mind, Memento, just about mind tricks.
Yeah.
And I really looking for screen life version of fantasy movie, like superheroes movies and fantasy movies. Because, and even musical can be done very, very, very organic because we know that people singing
TikTok, all these crazes where people start layering their takes of things on top of stuff. It's absolutely it's all happening on Earth. Like there's nothing, you're right, it seems like there's nothing you can't do. tell me about it from a production standpoint. Was this really shot in 9 days? That's what I read.
Yes, it was. It was 9 days first, and then it was like a few days additional photography. And it's usually screen live production takes no more than 2 weeks. And it will help us to work with the good actors, because they don't need to spend 3 months to make a movie. They can spend only 3 weeks. Also, production is quite different, because the huge part of the process is a post-production, because you have a chance to change the story, to fix the story in post-production, because the talking is screen life. It's not about talking heads. Because
right, first that's the mistake, tricky part, right? Because people could think that it is.
Yeah. First mistake we made, we were thinking like, okay, this is about just web camera. But in reality, the web camera, it's not the most effective way to tell the story, because the move of your mouse and the way how you click and way how you type and retype and delete and type again, it tells much more about what you feel and what you want. In this case, post-production is a quite important part.
So tell me about the post-production. So what do you shoot it on? What is the format? Like, what cameras do you use?
Sometimes we're not even using cameras. We're using web cameras, because the quality of web camera is 2K today, you know?
Right, yeah.
But we're using Blackmagic, GoPros, all the small cameras you can attach to the computer or to the mobile phone.
Got it. And then when you're creating all the stuff that would happen, say, on a screen, whether it's typing, texting, clicking, is that something that's created in a post yes. software?
Yes, yeah. yes. The early days of Screen Life, we just recorded the actors, and then the rest was kind of like an animated movie. You know, it was motion designers, they were producing all this interaction with the screen. Then I understood that it's not the right way to go, because we are missing real reactions, like actors, they don't react, they don't really interact with the screen, which is not good. And we created our own tools, recorders, to record the screen and actors at the same time, and to record not the pixels on the screen, because if you will record the screen, then you cannot change, you cannot cut things, because it'll be all baked in. And we developed and we patented different recorders recording the code. Generating pixels. In this case, we can post-production, we can change things, move elements, compose the screen as we like, and edit. Sorry, it's difficult to explain. It's easy to
show. Yeah, no, I understand. I think it's like the thing, the scale of what you're doing, so much of it is happening in how you're handling that side of it, right? On a screen life project. So it's
Yes.
It would be harder for somebody to replicate that. Like, it looks like, I think the point is, it looks like something you could do like on your screen, like you said, the way you first did them, but it's better to do it where you're controlling every aspect, right?
Yes. And when you allow actor to do, because it's a part of the acting, you know, the acting is not what's on your face. The acting is how you move your mouse, how you type, how you react on the events on the screen, like, somebody's calling you and your mouse is shaky, freezes right front of the button, answer the call. And you don't know what to do. And this is a part of the acting.
It really seems in profile, for example, that everybody was sort of leaning into part of the performance was happening and how they were using the tools.
Yeah. You know, and it's not
responding to the call coming in and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's what's important, that the actors gave us this performance, not animators.
It comes out better that way, is what you're saying, than if you tried to match by creating the animated movie based on what they did. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. It's not better maybe, but it's For me, for my taste, it gives you, it's more collaborative. It's more like a similar with the traditional filmmaking when the actors are part of the creative team.
And do you have to, you know, tweak it as part of the post, like sort of you have control over it a little bit, I assume, but you still end up doing a good deal of tweaking of that's what's happening on the screens.
Yes.
In the edit.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
When you finish these and you see them, when you see these movies, do they work? Do you feel, you know, you said 2K, but they are in this era, you know, so many movies are experienced streaming at home on a smaller screen or on a TV,
yes,
big screen TV or something. But how do these movies feel in the theater, like in a theatrical experience?
It's spectacular because it's a statement. It's a statement that the screen is very, very important part of our life. It's entertaining because screen has its own aesthetics, you know. It has its own beauty, and I don't know if 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we were enjoying the sunsets and beautiful old streets of Paris, whatever. And it was like a Death Valley or whatever. It was kind of science, like it's what was about the whole filmmaking. But in today's world, for today's audience, the pixels and the folders and the websites and how they placed, you know, how they composed on the screen. This is today's understanding of beauty for me.
Right. And this is the landscape. Yeah.
Yes, it's our landscape. And it's not unexpected because 50 years ago, 70 years ago, Mondrian or Lisitsky or, I don't know, Malevich or Picasso, they started this process. They began to create the more with abstract art. They started this process.
Using the medium more to be part of the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's modernist. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's why I'm enjoying how surprisingly beautiful and shiny, whatever.
Yeah.
The windows and pixels and
well, I mean, it's amazing. It is the landscape we experience. It is what our eyes see most of the day, whether we like it or not. It's where we exist. So it's the world as we experience it. We have to wrap up pretty soon, but this has been great. I think, like, I just want to, you know, obviously the timing of all of this, like, you've been working on this for a while, but we've been more in our screens in the last year than we ever were. Yes. And it's not going to slow down. And I am curious because, you know, I like to end on this, especially with a filmmaker with your kind of career. If you were advising a young filmmaker right now, someone who is interested in the medium or in storytelling, where would you suggest they start, or how would you suggest they get involved in the industry?
We have a few very interesting labs in different countries. In Liverpool, for example, in England, we have a great team teaching people and helping them to understand the screen life language. We have the same team in Los Angeles, where the office is, in Moscow, and now is in South Korea, because it's all online, it does not matter. I believe that the young filmmakers will try to express themselves by using screen life language because it's how they live. It's how they saying "I love you," how they, I don't know, make money or even the robbing bank. In it's very funny. It's very funny that in theater you see the traditional, very good, very well made scenes when the people, the guys with the in the masks with the shotguns, like breaking the door in the bank, the office, and just saying, "Hey, give me money." But
right,
it's a retro because there is no more money.
Right, it's not how it's done. Yeah, it's done on screens. That's such a good example. Well, hopefully we'll include in our show notes information about where people can learn to make movies this
way. Yes, please. We have a website called screenlifer.com.
Cool.
And then you can find the information you need and read everything about Screen Life, because we're trying to collect this facts and the connections. And please.
Excellent. Well, thank you again so much for doing this. It's been really fun. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to Timur for coming on. You can see Profile in theaters. It is definitely unique and you should check it out. Be sure to check out our gear guides. Go to nofilmschool.com. We have gear guides listed on the page as well as in the footer. You can buy and research all kinds of tech and gear that you are interested in. We have done the research, so all you have to do is figure out what you need to buy. Thanks so much for listening.